Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and this is Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Let's pray. We got cut off for all of our listeners last week. The show is about 4 minutes long. Went dead. I don't know what I'm blaming it on the Taliban. I think it was
the baby baboon. Because the last thing they heard was a couple of grunts from the baby baboon. Her first time on national radio.
I know. Yeah, our baby olive baboon. It's and you know, she was so keyed up for that moment that it was so disappointing. But our apologies to the listeners, and we're gonna have a great show tonight. We've got two wonderful guests tonight, so it's gonna be exciting. I've got a pet peeve though. Dr. Dave joined us. How are you doing, Henry?
Oh, doing good tonight, except for the heat.
Yeah, the heat. It's a little warm here in the Midwestern part of the United States, but he'll be along in a moment with the Wild World News. And, of course, a big thank you to Eric Altman over in Pennsylvania. He's in charge of all the technical expertise. And Eric, he emailed me 3 days ago. He says, I'm hoping that we have no problems tonight. So I don't think we will. It seems to be all going good. But thanks to Eric Altman. But here's my pet peeve. Folks, when you're driving around in the country, slow down. I'm telling you, the wildlife has a hard enough time. We're coming back with the tiger food. And this was like an hour ago. We're rushing home because I said, got the Blog Talk radio show tonight. Rushing home. But even, we live out in the middle of nowhere. And I see this little bunny on the road. And there I see this pickup, and he's just flat. And I know he can see the rabbit. Folks, slow down. Give the animals a chance. My gosh, that's so upsetting. I was so mad the other day. I was on a road that was a dirt road where you can't drive fast, and somebody had mowed down this beautiful black rat snake. You may not like snakes, but folks, they got an important role in the ecosystem. So think of, you know, they say watch out for the motorcyclists. I'm telling you tonight, this is Larry Batson, watch out for the critters out there, okay? That's all I'm saying. Stuff happens every once in a while, but God, slow down. Okay, I'm done. My anger's over with.
All right. Well, while we're on it, I want to say one thing to somewhat to that effect. The animal abandonment is on the uprise.
It is.
People cannot take an animal somewhere and turn it loose. It's against the law.
Yes.
You will be arrested. You cannot.
I think there should be public hangings myself, but nobody ever
asked
me.
All of the most of the humane societies and pet centers are. They're just overwhelmed right now due to the economy.
Yeah.
But do not turn your animals loose.
No, no, that's the last thing because
okay. That's
just like.
All right, now off to the fun. Let's have fun from now on.
May I add one other point?
Okay. And
furthermore.
This is Benny Williams from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, everybody. He's on tonight. What's your point, Benny?
My point is beyond the humane aspect of if you have a pet and you cannot afford to take care of it. I also want to bring the light of the severe, intense battle the service in the United States is fighting against injurious and invasive wildlife.
Yep.
That's non-indigenous species, like Burmese pythons in the swamps of Florida right now.
Yep.
And that is also a result of pets being released out in the wild that have no business being there. And at this point, they think they might have a naturally reproducing population of more than 10,000. That's another aspect that needs to be addressed.
It does. But one good thing, I have a friend that lives in he doesn't live in the Everglades, he borders, but because of the colder weather they had this winter, he said it put a big hurting on him. So I hope he's right. I don't know. All right, Henry, Dr. Henry Day with our Wild World News tonight.
All right. Well, tonight we're going to start off with some smelly insects.
Oh, thanks.
Heading off to Charleston, West Virginia. State agriculture officials are tracking a stinky pest that's damaging orchards and invading homes. Barry Cutchfield with the State Department of Agriculture says calls continue to increase about the brown marmalade stink bug.
Oh.
Since the Southeast Asian bug arrived in the state a few years ago.
Oh, my.
Yeah, stinky bugs.
Oh, I don't like them.
Well, we deal with a lot of stinky bugs every day, but I guess these are especially stinky.
Well,
all right, Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. Officials are warning residents. Excuse me?
Are you picking all West Virginia tonight?
Well,
it's really a nice place.
Yeah, it really is, yes. All right, but the officials are warning the residents to avoid nocturnal animals during the day, such as skunks and raccoons, due to the increase of rabies.
Yeah.
So people should know that any time you see a wild animal that you don't normally see during the day, to avoid it.
Well, you should avoid all wild animals, but especially that situation.
Yeah. For instance, a squirrel with a chainsaw. If you see a squirrel with a chainsaw,
that's bad.
Definitely avoid it. Okay, let's. Yes.
Never mind.
All right. Yeah. Well, I understand. Okay, let's go off to Espanola, New Mexico. Officials said a wildfire in the Santa Fe National Forest has spread over more than 5,000 acres. The South Fork Fire is one of three fires in the forest, and the firefighters hope to contain the fire here shortly, and the fire was started by lightning.
Yeah. That's bad. Well, that's part of Mother Nature there, though.
That's part of Mother Nature,
yeah.
Yeah.
But when you get the guys at uncontrollable campfires, that's a different deal. But if it's lightning, that's all part of the cycle.
Yep. Okay, well, we're going to run off to the, let's say scurry off to the rat race in New York City.
Oh,
the rats are winning the race. The rats have infested multiple subway lines in the lower Manhattan area and often live in the station walls. A rodent expert leading the battle against the rats in the nation's largest subway system said that the main attraction for the rats in the subway is the area where the trash is stored after it's collected from the cans on the platform. He says, and I'll try to do it in his voice, they're not down there in the deep, dark tunnels. The rats are living behind the tiles in the wall. But Corbin's recommendations include, advanced poison.
Yep.
And sealing of the trash rooms. Now, here's an idea. Seal the trash rooms.
Well, that or move the pythons from the Everglades into the subways of New York.
Now, there's already giant alligators. And,
a jungle anyway.
Yeah, it's a jungle already.
Okay.
Okay, Morehead City, North Carolina. Captain Eric Holmes on the boat Citation caught an 883-pound marlin to break the record of 831 pounds set in 2000 at the Big Rock Blue Marlin Tournament. The Hatteras-based Citation earned a bonus, now listen to this, of almost $319,000 for being the first to get a marlin over 500 pounds.
Was it now? Okay, go ahead.
Now, if the record stands for the biggest of the week, the Citation could win $913,000.
Wow. Now, you know, a little bit, in a few months, we're going to be talking to Benny Williams about getting kids inspired to go fishing. That would definitely get kids inspired to go fishing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you stapled a $20 bill to a bluegill.
You might have something there.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Well, I read somewhere that the big halibut that was caught up in Alaska, 300 and some odd pounds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a... Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Matter of fact, the state record when I was up there was like 550 pounds.
Oh.
On hook and line.
Gosh.
And the otoliths on the fish were so large. If you could imagine like four quarters next to each other in a square, they're that big. And some of the Native Americans make earrings out of the otoliths of those fish.
Oh, wow. That's a fish.
That's interesting.
Yes, I learned something tonight. I learned something every night. Okay, Doc.
All right. Well, a few weeks ago, I reported on the Palouse earthworm of Washington State and the Idaho area. And there's been so much excitement about these giant worms, but the worm has been denied protection. There won't be any endangered species protection for the great Palouse earthworm anytime soon. The 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals this week affirmed a lower court ruling that they found that there's not enough evidence to prove that the near mythic creature is threatened. The court found that virtually all the information about the worm was limited and inconclusive. In April, living specimens of the worm, which grew up to a foot long, were captured in Idaho. They're
wow.
capturing worms. They have to trap them, I imagine. But for the last 20 years, there's been no evidence of these worms, but they just appeared. They're going to file a new petition to try to get them protected.
I predict somebody will get enough of those worms, they'll start breeding them, and before long you'll be able to go to Bass Pro Shop or one of those places and buy a box of these char. Because, look, you only need one worm the whole day. I mean, let's just make little pieces of it, you know, or put the whole worm on and catch a monster fish. Lord.
All right, let's run off to Port Angeles, Washington. State officials have closed the beaches in two counties to recreational shellfish harvesting because of potentially deadly levels of paralytic shellfish poison. They're basically red tide.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Okay, now, let's see. 2 weeks ago, we had Captain Billy on, right?
Right, Billy Sandifer from Padre Island, Texas.
That's right. Remember, he told us about we were talking about the horseshoe crabs.
Yes, we were.
And how they brought in the little shorebirds, the migratory shorebirds.
Yeah.
Well, here's evidence right here. Captain Billy was right. Atlantic City, New Jersey, strict measures to restore the horseshoe crabs designed to increase the number of eggs they lay on the Delaware beaches there. The goal was to provide food for the red knots, a threatened shorebird.
There you go. That's exactly what he was talking
migratory
about.
Migratory shorebird, 80% cut in the harvest since 1989 has boosted what the locals call the king crab.
Boosted?
The red knots, the shorebirds, are coming back in due to the... And Billy told us that a couple weeks ago.
I know he did. Well, you know, we're on top of anything that deals with the wild world and the natural habitats and the fauna.
Or
the world. Oh, absolutely, we've got to be.
But our guests are so informative, too, and
we're Benny's great guests.
Take care of us here in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, I think the last story of the night... one thing before our turtle story. I was going through your second book.
Yeah.
The
Alphabet Swamp.
Alphabet Swamp. And I got to what is the carpenter bee called?
Xylocoba bee.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to it, and I realized that the carpenter bee, which they're living in my house right now, you know, on the outside, they drill a perfectly half-inch hole in the wood.
Yeah.
And, you know, they nest. And when I was a kid, I learned that the carpenter bees don't have a stinger. They can't sting you.
Yeah.
So I was out in the backyard, and here comes one. And so I just reach up and snatch him out of the air with my hand.
Yeah.
But nobody told me that they can chew through a piece of wood in a matter of a few seconds. And it was like holding a joy buzzer, an electric joy buzzer.
Yeah, it'll bite the snot out of you.
but you know, reading your book refreshed my memory of my first encounter with Carpenter Bee.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, let's finish this up. Let's get Benny on. Topsail Beach, North Carolina. Volunteers released 16 turtles rehabilitated at the Karen Beasley Sea Turtle Rescue and Rehabilitation Center. Many of the turtles had been injured by pollution or boat propellers. Dozens of spectators lined up to watch the turtles go back into the water. It took 9 people to carry the largest turtle, weighing over 200 pounds.
Wow, that's a big
turtle. Now, the last time I was at the Batson Wildlife Preserve,
yeah,
I saw the biggest turtle I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Now, is that a 200-pound turtle?
He probably is. It's an alligator snapping turtle I have. Back when I was over in Washington with Benny Williams for the Kids' Day fishing, I had a baby alligator snapping turtle. Boy, the kids were impressed if I could figure out a way to haul this thing around.
Oh, man.
200 pounds. I mean, its head's the size of a mushmelon. I mean, it's huge. It comes up and takes chicken leg quarters right out of my hand.
Well, I've done a lot of diving in the ocean, but that's the biggest turtle I've ever seen.
Well, that's a whopper. So that's our Wild World News for this week.
That's it for tonight.
Well, thank you, Doctor. We really appreciate it. We also appreciate our underwriters that keeps Larry Batson's Wild World on the air, such as Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes. They cover 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. Known for world-class fishing, they hold 7 state records and 1 world record. And if you want to go fishing, and I mean get into the whoppers, the big cats and so forth, here's who you need to get a hold of. www.santeecoopercountry.org, or call the girls, and they'll set you up with a fishing adventure. It's 1-800-227-8510. And a big thank you to We Want You Cottages up in Chautauqua Lake, New York. Peter and Kathy Weimer, they're the folks. If you want to go on vacation up there and get into that muskie and walleye and bass fishing, super place. And also Peter, his big project, and we're going to talk about it because he's here tonight. We got cut off last week, and Peter was going to be on last week. But we thought tonight's going to be all about the kids, but he's got this exciting new television program called iKids Fishing. And also on their website, kids can take pictures of that big whopper they just caught, and they can download it onto the website and compare it to kids all across the country. That's iKids Fishing. The website is www.wewantchu.com. Or give them a call, 716-789-3383. We Want You Cottages up in Chautauqua Lake, New York, up in western New York. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge in Estes Park, Colorado, a big thank you. And this borders Rocky Mountain National Park. Beautiful splendor. I tell you what, this is God's country. And the McGregor Mountain Lodge and cabins is right on the borderline of Rocky Mountain National Park. And if you've never been out west, you need to do it at least once. And if you're going to go out west, give these guys a call, 1-800-835-8439, or go on their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. And also Bass Pro Shops and the Tracker Marine Boating Center down in Clarksville, Indiana. Right next to Louisville, and folks, if you've never been to the Bass Pro Shop, it's an adventure in itself. While Dad's checking out the latest fishing equipment, the kids can go through the aquarium and see all the beautiful fish they have on display, and also it's like a museum. And they've got animals mounted from around the world, and these are so well done, and the Bass Pro Shop, it's spectacular. That's down by Louisville, Kentucky, Clarksville, Indiana. Here's their phone number, 812-218-5369. And you need to talk to Dan White. He's the guy down there in charge of the whole deal. So that's the Bass Pro Shops and the Tracker Marine Boating Center. Those are our underwriters. We love them. They help us out, keep us on the air. And also, don't forget my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. It tells all about our wildlife education work that we do, also our wild animal rescue and the programs, and if you want to contribute to what we do, because we are a 501c3 company. You can see a little thing to click that says donate, and any donation is appreciated. And, of course, there you can also buy our brand-new book for the kids. And, folks, when we send these books out, they're signed to whomever you want. They're $10. It's the Alphabet Swamp, and we're very proud of it. In fact, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was so kind. They picked up 300 of these books to hand out to the urban youth of Washington, D.C., and it was quite humbling for them to do that. Tonight we have a very spectacular, we have two guests, but first of all, Benny Williams, he's among seven federal managers who received a Legends Award from the American Recreation Coalition. The award recognized outstanding work to improve outdoor recreation experiences and opportunities for the American people. Williams oversees the coordination of the Interjurisdictional Fisheries and Recreational Fisheries Management at the national level for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Folks, he's all about kids. He's all about getting the kids outdoor to go fishing. He's one heck of a guy. All the way from Washington, D.C., big hello to our good friend, Benny Williams. Good evening, Benny.
Greetings, and good evening to you there, Larry. It's always a pleasure, sir.
Oh, man, I'd catch a breath. We're going to have Peter Weimer along here in a little bit as well on the iKids Fishing Show, because you guys have a lot in common getting these kids outdoor to go fishing. It's and what a great event in Washington a week from last Monday.
Well, you know, Larry, that event was the 21st annual event, youth fishing event, held there at the Constitution's Garden Pond. I didn't realize it, but when I first became a fishery biologist back in the late 80s, working for the District of Columbia, I was associated with that event. And here it is up and running 21 years later when I started back with the Fish and Wildlife Service here at the Washington office in 2003. I tell you, it was an alignment. It must have been alignment in the stars, and Lord looked down and said it was good, because I don't think that event will ever be surpassed, especially in terms of catch per unit effort, which is the way we measure the amount of fish caught per every angler. And, Larry, I had one young fellow caught 10 fish that day. Oh. And 10 fish.
I know.
And, see, that's what it's about, because then they're hooked. Then we got a real good chance of creating that spark that can last a lifetime. And we had another class. We asked them to get back on the bus, and I thought a couple of them were going to drop some tears, Larry, because they were having such a good time.
Well, I was running around there doing with the snakes and alligators and things, and the kids, they wanted to stay fishing. The fish were biting so well. And, you know, that was a great idea to put the stock those fish. What did you do, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, so Mother Nature worked with us, so we stocked it about 2 weeks ago with 400 largemouth bass. Now, that pond, the best-kept secret in town in Washington, D.C., we've been stocking that pond consistently for the past 6 years. And 2 weeks ago on Monday, it had rained, thunderstormed both Saturday and Sunday, and Monday, and Tuesday morning, we stocked that pond with 400 largemouth bass, and there is a healthy reproducing population of bluegill in that pond. So it's worked out very nicely with apex predator species, the forage species like bluegill and crappie and yellow perch and white perch that have been put into the pond. So it's like the stars lined up and the barometer, the temperature, everything. Just for a wonderful day. It was partly cloudy, and Larry, you were there. We had a breeze. It was like 72 degrees, almost like you were on the ocean.
It was
the most pleasant day. I was upset because I wish I had a hammock that I could have set up right there up at the top, and I could have taken a great nap. It was just absolutely gorgeous. But I tell you what else, too, Larry. When we were speaking earlier, two topics, red tides, which reminded me in my college days, when I was taking a class in oceanography, and I did a paper on red tides, and it was one of my better papers. And on the title page, I had a quote from the Bible, from Exodus, and when Moses tapped his rod to the Nile, it turned red, making the analogy that in that part of the Bible, what was actually happening was a red tide. And oceanography is very interesting because those little dinoflagellates and different species, which under the right conditions can become very toxic to the environment. So I had personal experience with that. Got an A-minus on that paper, by the way.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then also, when we're talking about horseshoe crabs,
yep.
Limulus polyphemus.
Oh, there we go.
Yes, indeed. I spent 6 years as the Maryland State Volunteer Horseshoe Crab Coordinator. And that was a wonderful experience. In the Chesapeake Bay area, the full moon in June is the peak spawning time for horseshoe crabs. And I also helped do some volunteer work with the Delaware survey. And we would go out. It was the most beautiful time. You'd be out like 1 or 2 in the morning, out on the beach, and these crabs would be coming up, and they would just be spawning everywhere. You'd have the large she crab, and then all these little males behind her lining up to try to spawn. Matter of fact, I have some pet horseshoe crabs myself that I raised from eggs. But this is a very fascinating animal, man.
They are a lot to this crab.
Because they have that special blood, which is copper-based. That is why their blood is blue. Ours is iron-based. That is why our blood is red. And part of the scientific name is based on Greek mythology from a cyclops. Because if you know, if you take a horseshoe crab and bend the carapace right there at that edge, it looks like a cyclops. And that's where half of that scientific name came from. The other thing being that those crabs have 10 light-sensing organs, and the females carry the crabs actually in the top part of the shell. And ironically, because one of the things I do working with interjurisdictional fishery management, the horseshoe crab fishery management plan was the first management plan really put together by the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission in the Atlantic States, when they didn't have a full population assessment available due to the political influence of the Audubon Society and the birders on the Atlantic coast. And so it's interesting with the horseshoe crab eggs. They're very important to the hemispheric shore birds like red knots and plovers and so forth. But it's interesting in terms of we're still trying to find out what part of that diet is there and what is the percentage of their diet when it comes to those eggs, because in different years you have variability. Sometimes the birds show up and the horseshoe crabs haven't started spawning yet. And so there's still a lot of work to be studied on this an intense key relationship between horseshoe crabs and hemispheric shorebirds. So I look forward to seeing where it's going to go. But it's the only case of an actually fishery management plan being developed where there was not a total data set to estimate the population size of the Atlantic horseshoe crab. So I just thought I'd share that with the listeners, too. It's very historical.
Well, we're glad you did. All we want to bring in before we go to our break, we're talking kids tonight, folks. With the iKids Fishing Program, we want you cottages up in western New York, Chautauqua Lake. Our good friend Peter Weimer. Good evening, Peter.
How's it going, Larry?
It's going great. I wish we had a two-hour show tonight. Man,
hey, all right. You got some great speakers today.
Oh, I'm telling you. Of course, young Justin, your son's on with us tonight as well.
Yeah.
Hi, Justin.
Are
you catching any fish lately, Justin?
About 40 lately.
How many have you caught lately?
40.
40?
Oh, my gosh.
Now, you know, I've heard a lot of fishermen lie a lot. You wouldn't lie to me, would you?
I'm not lying.
We believe
now, Justin, we're fortunate we get to live here on Chautauqua Lake, and that's where we taped our iKids Fishing TV show, a TV show starring kids, teaching kids how to catch fish. And really, Justin can go down to the dock here and catch 30 to 40 fish every time he goes.
Really?
And he has a ball. We hosted the Cub Scouts fishing day in early May, and those kids, we had probably 35, 40 scouts and their parents come down and fish off our dock, and they all caught a bunch of fish. I mean, not everybody caught fish, but everybody caught, maybe not everybody caught 30 or 40 fish, but everybody
right.
caught some fish, that's for sure.
Well, that's fantastic. What we need to do is figure out a way to bring a busload up from Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring
well,
bay.
You know, the nice thing about those bass that you were talking about earlier is that bass don't eat their own. They protect their schools of baby bass, minnows, and where a lot of the other fish, muskies, walleye, et cetera, they end up eating a lot of their own, and bass don't, and that's a great thing.
Absolutely. Well, that's exciting. Hey, folks, we got a lot to talk about. We have to take a short break because we have some wonderful PSAs, public service announcements. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on, and we're still on, Blog Talk Radio, everybody. Be back in just a few moments.
Hey, Larry.
Yes.
We're still live on the air. I'm having a problem with the switchboard at the moment. It froze up on me, so if you guys want to continue to talk for a minute.
Well, let's just say heck with the PSAs this week. What the heck?
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. We're sorry for that slight delay, but things do happen. And this is Larry Batson's Wild World. We also want to thank our underwriters, such as We Want You Cottages up in western New York, Chautauqua Lake, and folks, if you're planning to go fishing for the muskie and the walleye, the bass, it's all up there, and great host. I'm telling you, great facilities. You can rent a boat, have a great time. Peter and Kathy Weimer up at We Want You Cottages, and, of course, Peter's behind the very exciting new kids fishing show, iKids Fishing. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge in scenic Estes Park, Colorado, right on the borders of Rocky Mountain National Park, one of my favorite places in the whole world. And to get info about staying at McGregor Mountain Lodge, and you won't regret it, info at McGregorMountainLodge.com. And here's their 800 number, so grab a pencil, 1-800-835-8439. And a big thank you, of course, to the Bass Pro Shops down in Clarksville, Indiana, very close to Louisville, Kentucky, and the Tracker Marine Boating Center. Their number, 812-218-5369, and you talk about an indoor adventure, that's it. Bass Pro Shops. Dad can go check out the latest fishing equipment while the kids, they can have a chance to see all this magnificent wildlife that they've mounted and also this fantastic aquarium. I mean, you walk through these rooms and the fish are swimming over your head. Absolutely. So it's fantastic. That's the Bass Pro Shops. And also Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie. And you talk about getting in some catfishing. That's the place to go. It's 171,000 acres. The place is huge. I went fishing down there about 3 years ago. 450 miles of shoreline, and they're known for world-class fishing. Hold 7 straight records, 1 world record. And you get to them by SanteeCooperCountry.org or call the girls down there, Shirley, Marilyn, 1-800-227-8510. Our guest tonight, we have two guests from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, our good friend Benny Williams. He's been on the program before, but he's so spectacular we had to have him back on again. And, of course, our good friend up in Chautauqua Lake, Peter Weimer. Good evening, Benny.
Good evening.
And, of course,
wanted to talk to the other guests. We were having a little conversation before we started in terms of how we can work on getting – urban youth in the fishing, and I had mentioned the fact that unfortunately now more than 80% of the population live in urban areas, and a lot of youth have never been exposed to a healthy habitat where they could go fishing and or eat the fish that they catch if they, you know, so choose. So I'm looking at some ideas of how we could brainstorm to build some partnerships, maybe with one of the bus companies to help get kids out of the city to different areas, and there are different urban areas that do have actual public access to fishing, but we just got to get the kids there because it's a little bit different culture from when we were growing up. You know, I was a scout, and play was always associated with outdoors, and now there's sort of a crisis in this country where Generation X and, well, Generation Y, which, Larry, I just found out here in the last 30 days, they're calling them the millenniums now. I'm just catching on. what can we do to provide that opportunity for them?
Well, I think one of the great things, besides the programs that you do and the great program we were at a week ago, was the idea of kids showing kids how to fish. We needed to figure out a way for all those youngsters that went fishing in Washington to have a chance to see Peter's show.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, Larry, you know, it's a lot easier than it sounds because, really, we show in that, in our TV show, which is no big deal, but, I mean, we did it out of a labor of love and showing everybody that it really is quite cheap to take a child fishing. You can buy a fishing pole for $10 to $15. You can buy some tackle and hooks and sinkers for another $5 or $10. You can go dig up your own worms or go buy some worms, and before you know it, you have less than $100 invested and a lifetime to enjoy for a child or a kid to fish with his parents or grandparents or friends.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And it is. I'll tell you, when you see the kids, even on the little blurb that we have on our website at iKidsFishing.com, it's about a one-minute shot of kids catching fish and how exciting it is. And, you know, that kind of stuff is unbelievable because I see it in the kids that are in my own family, and I see it in the kids that are staying in the cottages going down to the dock fishing. And when my friends come over and their kids are catching fish, I mean, it is, and it's not that hard.
No. And I'll tell you what, I think, as Benny said, Peter Weimer from My Kids Fishing on the Night and Benny Williams from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, when we were in Washington last week and the kids, they were so excited fishing. It was inspiring. In fact, I want to stop and go fishing with them.
You know,
and
I got Justin here. He's getting tired here, so we better get him on before he falls asleep.
Yes, indeed.
Because it's past his bedtime. But he's a classic example. He's 9 years old. He's an avid little fisherman. And just like a lot of his friends are, and I'll let him tell you about a little bit of his fishing.
Hi.
Hi, Justin. So,
hey, Justin.
Hi.
What my question for you, Justin, if you met a young man or a young lady and they've never been fishing before, what kind of advice would you give them?
Well, my advice would. Well, I'm a kid, so I'm not sure if this is correct. My advice would be to come to a cottage resort like my father's with a great view of the lake and get a boat rental and just go around the lake and see some sights and views and maybe try fishing. And after that, you could... the person that like takes you out boat fishing and stuff. Yeah,
charter. Guide. Yeah.
Yeah. And let him teach you how what kind of fish are on this lake and good eating and how to fly them.
That's right. Could you have said that any better, Benny?
Nope. Not at all.
Not at all.
You know.
Well, that's fantastic.
And, of course, Justin's a big Bigfoot fan.
I've heard about that.
Which we know Mr. Batson here is a national authority on Bigfoot. And, of course, as many of you know, there's Bigfoots practically everywhere in the United States and Canada, or almost everywhere. Never proven to be seen or videotape, but they're out there, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, there's
and now
one.
They just had a sighting, which I just watched today. This man, somewhere, I forgot where, but a Sasquatch was like,
yeah.
Walked right in front of him, and there was like a little tire path.
Yeah.
So he walked right on there, and the guy had a 2-inch thin log and, like, was, like saying, back, go back. And then it started to wander off and have the trees for protection for camouflage.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't have said that any better.
It's amazing, Larry.
It's absolutely amazing.
You have started a national, I'm sure it was already started before you came along, but I mean, Justin is he follows Bigfoot a lot because of knowing you and your work behind it, and so it's pretty interesting.
Well, I think anything that gets a young person like Justin interested in reading, that gets a young person interested in going outdoors, I'm all for it.
There you
go.
So
if that's what takes to spawn that interest, I mean, to get them to read and go out in the woods and enjoy Mother Nature, hey, go for it. I'm all for it. Well, thanks, Justin. I'm glad you were on our show.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Hey, I'll call you sometime. We'll have a chat about that. How about that?
Okay.
And I'll... I can lie to you just like I do everybody else. I mean, so we're talking fishing tonight, folks, and of course our good friend Benny Williams at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And what's coming up in the future, Benny, on your programs that you've? Because you know your seventh federal manager received a Legends Award, so I know you've always got something going on.
Well, actually, I think you had a chance to meet Jim Owens.
Right.
And I'll give a shout out to Jim Owens. He's the president and CEO of the Catch a Special Thrill Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Foundation works nationwide to present special needs youth with the opportunity to go fishing and catch a fish. And we have our thinking caps on, and we're trying to see if we can start another tradition, a fall tradition here in the nation's capital, where we can maybe concentrate on getting 40 special needs youth out on bass boats in the fall to do some fishing. And so that's something that we're working on as we speak. Also, we're trying to look at, too, on a national level, how we can work with wonderful partners, another great partner, that worked with me on this event. We used their actual education modules, was the Recreational Boating and Fishing Foundation. Frank Peterson is the president of that foundation, and we have really supported each other over the past several years to put this event together. I look at urban areas in particular, how we can maybe sponsor some grants so that we can get fishing tackle in more urban recreation centers where kids can check them out on loan, on borrow, so they'll have a fishing pole if they don't have one themselves to be able to check it out and go fishing. Many times it's just who can provide that first opportunity to get these kids out. I worked, when I worked for the District of Columbia back in the late 80s, I did an Adopt-A-Mile, the Anacostia program. The Anacostia River is sort of like the forgotten sister river of the Potomac there in Washington. At one time, they had a port there called Bladensburg, which was one of the three deep water ports in Washington, D.C., delivering trade and goods. And when agriculture became a primary emphasis in Prince George's County and they started chopping down the trees in and cultivating crops, the Anacostia filled up very, very quickly. And now it's a very slow-moving, with a very slow flushing rate, and the silt, it's been silted in by the expansive clays there in that local geology. And it's a very sad story. And one of the schools I worked with was actually there at the event, Larry, or elementary. They were they had something like, 60 kids there. Well, I taught a class, and I went in one day, and I asked the kids in the class. I was working with sixth graders, and I said, well, what do you think is in the river? And one little lady raised her hand and said dead bodies.
Oh, God.
And, And none of them had ever been fishing before. And the school was less than 2 blocks from the Anacostia.
Wow.
And at that time, I was fishing biologist for Washington, D.C. And there were loads of fish in the Anacostia, but people never knew about it. And they thought because it was muddy a lot because of the fine particulates, because of that coastal plain geology there in that part of the city, they didn't even know fish were there. So we're faced with a dilemma. How do we cultivate? How do we get them to get that first experience? And that's what we are going to continue to work on, and I will continue to work on throughout my career, by all means.
Well, that's, you know, that's, we laugh at that. Was kind of sad.
It's very sad because, see, unfortunately, they don't have parents that have been involved in these activities now. And that's the really sad fact. And so we're faced with that dilemma, but we're not going to let it defeat us. We're going to stay positive. We're going to and work together and build bridges and partnerships just to get these kids in the outdoors in general. A lot of people don't realize that urban kids that are impoverished, they might live in the projects, they might have a single parent. When it comes to things like camping or something, they're like, well, why the hell would I want to go camping? Because to them it's just mimicking being poor, living in a tent, because their first exposure to wildlife was negative. It might be rats and roaches. See, it's a whole other mindset in the urban areas, but we can't use that as an excuse not to succeed, but we're going to put on our thinking caps and build bridges and partnerships to get these kids out here because it's their future. And the kids, if they never have the opportunity to be in a pristine or semi-pristine or healthy habitat to explore, they're never going to have that sense of wonder. I myself, I have no idea why, but for some odd reason, my mom kept pictures I drew in kindergarten of underwater scenes. I had this bug. It was in my blood. It was in my mind. But for a lot of kids, it's not. And just think how many future Larry Batsons, how many future people that would work within the community to help develop and continue the work. And do what I'm doing and do what our other guest is doing. We have to at least expose them and give them the opportunity to think about it, and that is our greatest dilemma.
Well, I think one of the strongest things with Peter's program is that kids teach kids.
And, you know, Larry, I tell you, we 3 years ago, and I mean, we're fortunate we get to live here. We have a cottage resort on a lake. It's beautiful. But we don't feel like we're camping. We went about 3 years ago. We started camping at Allegheny State Park. It's a New York State Park about 30, 40 minutes from where we live. And the first time, I think we had like 18 or 20 cabins worth of families. It was very, you know, affordable. It was like, I don't know, $50, $60 a night. And, you know, the kids... My kids had never experienced camping before, and we had so much fun. And all the other kids had so much fun. There were 15, 18, 20 cabins full of other families just like us with little kids, and that's why we all went, because all our kids were friends with each other. And, you know, I'll tell you what, it was more fun than you could throw a rock at. We came back from a weekend. We were totally exhausted. Sure, sleep deprivation, because I got up every 2 hours to stoke a little wood-burning stove to try to keep us warm in November. But it was a ball. And the kid, we brought change of clothes, and sure enough, my son Justin, he must have fallen in the creek 3 times in the first 2 hours, went through all his dry clothes. And that's the fun of camping. And
absolutely.
If it's just, you know, and I feel bad that the kids in the city and feel like that's a strike against being, you know, poor or whatever. But, boy, I'll tell you what, it is some of the bestest times in the world.
Well, it is. And kids nowadays, they're so, not only in the urban areas, but out here where I live, you know, the kids, they're indoors with the computer games and iPods and all this stuff. And I have to watch myself.
A lot of them would be going with withdrawal. If you said, we're going to a cabin and we're going camping, you can't take your Game Boy or your cell phone or your iPod, they wouldn't know what to do.
What'd I do wrong? Am I in trouble?
You know, I know it because my son and children, I mean, they're maybe not glued to the Game Boys, but I sure complain about it more than most.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what Benny's saying is true.
I always go ahead.
Well, this hurts me because I shared this with Larry last show. I said, the reason I'm a fishery biologist now is because I was blessed enough to have two parents that exposed me to a lot. And in eighth grade, we went up to Hyannis, Massachusetts. We had a cabin up there for a couple weeks, and we went out on a boat, and I caught an 8.5-pound black sea bass, and my life was never the same. Because, you know, the thrill of reeling in a fish and not knowing what it was, from the time I knew I had something to the time I got it up to the surface, was the greatest high, the greatest thrill in my life. And I'm, and for the rest of my life, when I want to relax, when I want peace of mind, when I want to unwind, that is my favorite activity. There's nothing on this earth that I enjoy more. And I was lucky. I was blessed because a lot of these kids don't have two parents.
Right.
Much less one parent that does well enough to present them with that opportunity. But that one experience was all it took, and my life was never the same.
Wow. Well, it's like I said, if you want to see a look of shock and horror, tell a child that when we grew up, we had to actually get up and change the channels on the television. And there were only four channels.
And it, most of the time when we were young, Larry, they were black and white.
Black and white.
That's right, with a little screen in a big box.
Yeah. Yeah, which I, you know, and I'll tell you what, for myself, I think I grew up in the perfect time. It's like, I really, we got to work with these kids. We got to help these kids because they've got to experience and feel some of the things that we did. They need to go out and get muddy.
Well, we got to get them outdoors, and that's one thing Secretary Salazar and the Department of Interior and President Obama are really supporting. We have to get the kids outdoors, come hell or high water, or else all is lost, because there will be no sense of wonder, no positive reinforcement. They won't be able to realize that you don't have to have a Game Boy and an iPod or your cell phone with multiple applications to enjoy yourself. All you need to do out there is you can go out with a camera and take pictures, explore, hike, go fishing, go hunting, whatever. Whatever they enjoy to do it, but we have to get them out there first, or else they will never experience that type of joy, that sense of wonder. And my epiphany, I think my most spiritual moment in life came in the outdoors. So when I was working for the service up in Cold Bay, Alaska, it was my day off. We worked 6 days on, one day off. I'm out there with a 7-8 weight fly rod, with the sinking tippet line at the end with the egg-sucking leech, and there was a rainbow, and I'm under a mountain with the glacier, and the sun is cutting down through the clouds. It looks like something right at the gate of heaven. And if you ever wanted to prove the existence of a higher being, it was there because it was absolutely gorgeous, and the salmon were coming up the stream so thick you could walk across the stream on their back.
Wow.
That is what more Americans in general, because, see, I grew up watching Kurt Gowdy in American Sportsman.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I always fantasize. You know, you see the football players and the hockey players and the baseball players, all these people going to all these exotic locales around the world, fishing and hunting. And there I was, end up, you know, in my 30s, on this stream, in a little town with 142 people at Isaac Bay National Wildlife Refuge. The only person fishing, and it was my proverbial river run through it.
And that's why we made that TV show, Benny, is because there's not a TV show out there showing little kids catching fish, teaching other little kids. I mean, we sit there and watch TV shows sometimes of grown-ups catching fish, fishing on million-dollar sport yachts or $30,000 or $40,000 bass boats. And my kids and I can't relate to that because we can't afford that. And we wanted to show people how easy and inexpensive it was to take your kids fishing.
Like Opie on Andy Griffiths with a cane pole.
You know it. I'll tell you, we used a $15 pole. We used cheap worms and minnows and artificial baits. We didn't use any fancy schmancy lures and stuff. It was keep it simple. And
that's right.
And the kids that that came along for the ride, that went fishing with my kids and their best friends, but they're all the stars of that kids TV fishing show. But we couldn't train them how to be excited. They were just naturally excited. And that's the beauty of what we tried to show people, is that it doesn't take a lot to get kids excited about fishing. You just got to put a worm on that hook. And like you said, they have no idea what they're reeling in. They're just excited about catching that fish that's coming in, and all of a sudden it's next to them on shore or on a dock or on a boat. And that's why we did our show, and that's why you do what you do, and I'm sure that's why Larry does what he does. It's a beautiful thing.
It's all about the kids.
It is all about the kids.
It's our future generation, and I know the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is as a selfish means for this, because we need biologists, we need zoologists, we need geologists, we need the future of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and if these kids don't go outdoors and get exposed to this and want to get an education in any of these fields, it's not going to be there. It's not going to happen.
Well, and if we extend it even a little bit further, gentlemen, here is the harsh reality. 20 or 30 years from now, we're going to have a generation that has not had a positive experience outdoors. And when it comes to Capitol Hill and fiscal expenditures to run the federal government, and in particular the agencies that manage our federal lands, if they've never been on a federal land and had a positive experience, they're going to say, well, what do we need that land for? Let's chop down all the trees. Let's mine all the coal.
That's right.
Let's take all the fish out of the rivers. Why? I'm not using it.
Uh-huh.
That's the harsh reality.
Yeah, that's sad.
Well, that's always been the aspect of my programs. And when we visit the schools through the fall and winter months and spring with our animals, we realize we're not talking to 400 or 500 future zoologists, but these young people are going to grow up and they're going to vote, and they're going to decide whether we need to keep places like Yellowstone National Park, and the Adirondacks and Glacier and Rocky Mountain and all the Piedmont and all the beautiful places that now are protected by the government that are so threatened by, the people that want the money. I mean, let's face it, that's what's happened down in Louisiana right now because of greed. Now we're facing probably the greatest natural disaster we'll ever see.
Yes, indeed.
And God bless everybody that's out there helping. Gosh, and I hope they get this job done.
I hope so, too.
You know what Billy Sandifer told me? And I'll relate this to Benny. He says, put the Navy SEALs on that deal.
You know it.
he said, them bad boys, they'll figure out a way to stop up that darn well.
I know that's right.
Well, we want to thank Benny Williams with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Benny, we love you, man. It's always great to have you on, and you add so much to the program. And we're going to do this again real soon.
Well, it's always my pleasure because I played football in college, so just call me a pulling guard for youth and natural resources in America.
There you go. And Peter Weimer over at Chautauqua Lake, we want you cottages. Thanks, Peter. Good luck with the iKids fishing.
Hey, thanks, Larry, and best to you and your family as well. Thank you.
And it was great to have Justin on. Of course, a big thank you to Eric Altman. He kept us on the air this week. God, great job.
Thank you.
Eric, you did great.
That's
right. And, of course, Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News. Thank you, Doctor.
Great show tonight.
It was a fantastic show. This was a classic. Next week on the program, on Larry Batson's Wild World, we're going to visit with Igloo Ed. He's the mountain man of Rocky Mountain National Park, and we're going to find out about his latest adventure scaling peaks and glaciers out there in God's country in the beautiful state of Colorado. See you next week, Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Larry Batson, and you've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
All righty. Peace out.
Peace out. Thanks, everybody.
Peace out, guys. Thank you.
Okay, now.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Mm-hmm.